rest. Kirtadhi. The determined king of the Yavanas. Enam. Him. Bhayanama. Whose name was fear. Abhyapadyata. Came there immediately. Translation. Although King Puranjana should not have lamented over the fate of his wife and children, he nonetheless did so due to his miserly intelligence. In the meantime, Yavanaraj, whose name was fear itself, immediately drew near to arrest him. Why don't you repeat after me? Although King Puranjana should not have lamented over the fate of his wife and children, he nonetheless did so due to his miserly intelligence. In the meantime, Yavanaraj, whose name was fear itself, immediately drew near to arrest him. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Foolish people do not know that every individual soul is responsible for his own actions and reactions in life. As long as a living entity in the form of a child or boy is innocent, it is the duty of the father and mother to lead him in a proper understanding of the values of life. When a child is grown, it should be left up to him to execute the duties of life properly. The parent, after his death, cannot help the child. A father may leave some estate for his children's immediate help, but he should not be overly absorbed in thoughts of how his family will survive after his death. This is the disease of the conditioned soul. Not only does he commit sinful activities for his own sense gratification, but he accumulates great wealth to leave behind so that his children may also gorgeously arrange for sense gratification. In any case, everyone is afraid of death. Get it closer. Everyone is afraid of death, and therefore death is called bhaya, or fear. Although King Puranjana was engaged in thinking of his wife and children, death did not wait for him. Death does not wait for any man. It will immediately carry out its duty. Since death must take away the living entity without hesitation, it is the ultimate God-realization of the atheists who spoil their lives in thinking of country, society, and relatives to the neglect of God-consciousness. In this verse, the word atad aranam is very significant, for it means that one should not be overly engaged in welfare activities for one's family members, countrymen, society, and community. None of these will help a person to advance spiritually. Unfortunately, in present-day society, so-called educated men have no idea what spiritual progress is, although they have the opportunity in the human form of life to make spiritual progress. They remain misers. They use their lives improperly and simply waste them thinking about the material welfare of their relatives, countrymen, society, and so on. One's actual duty is to learn how to conquer death. Lord Krishna states the process of conquering death in Bhagavad Gita 4.9. Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatvataha chatva deham punar janma Naiti mam eti sorjuna. One who knows The transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving this body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. After giving up this body, one who is fully Krishna conscious does not accept another material body, but returns home back to Godhead. Everyone should try to attain this perfection. Unfortunately, instead of doing so, people are absorbed in the thoughts of society, friendship, love, and relatives. This Krishna consciousness movement, however, is educating people throughout the world and informing them how to conquer death. Harim vina na sutam taranti. One cannot conquer death without taking shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The translation again. Although King Paranjana should not have lamented over the fate of his wife and children, he nonetheless did so due to his miserly intelligence. In the meantime, Yavanaraj, whose name was fear itself, immediately drew near to arrest him. So here he's convicted of Kripanaya Bhujya, of having miserly intelligence. The characteristic of a miser is that he possesses enormous wealth but lives just like a poor man, realizes none of the benefit of his wealth. He stuffs his mattress with bills and fills his garden with silver and gold underground and lives like a poor man. Every so often in New York City, the periodic standard New York story is some street person or bag lady dies, and they go into the some place where they live, some run-down tenement apartment, and find hundreds of thousands of dollars stashed away and molding in the midst of incredible squalor and filth. This is the characteristic of a miser. They may have so much money, but it's useless. So a human being is considered miserly. There's a contrast, Brahmana Kripana. A Brahmana who knows the value of the human form of life and uses it for spiritual advancement, and the Kripana, or the miser, who wastes the assets that we are given. So here he's also convicted of miserly intelligence, that he has the intelligence, the human form of life, but because of this miserliness at the time of death, it's shown he is lamenting over which he should not have lamented. Instead of now concentrating his attention on the business of going back to Godhead, he's lamenting over his wife and children. And we can see right away, as Prabhupada describes, if you look at this activity, how useless it is. Because he's no longer in a position to do anything anyway. And in generally, people who become materially attached, they're absorbed in trying to correct things and deal with things that they are no position to do anything about. Take children. Parents are coming to such engage in such a lamentation and suffering over their children, and yet without realizing that this child comes to us with a whole history, as is maybe very young, but is actually very old. The soul is described as Purana, is very old. And has a huge history going back so many millions of lifetimes. So there's a chance, of course, when a child is young, It is the duty of the father and mother to lead him into a proper understanding of the values of life. But by the time the child is 12 years old, the parents have done, they've had their chance. They've had their chance. There's a limit to what they can do anyway. They should discharge their duty and raise a child properly and teach them the values of life. Understanding that because you're not writing on a blank slate, the child has a history, and for a little time you have some duty toward this child. But there's no sense in which this child can be considered your child or my child, my son, my daughter. Only in a very conventional sense, because this child has had many parents. I'm just one in a series. At any rate, by the time he or she is 12 years old, I've pretty much had my say. I've done everything I can do. And at that point, the child will develop as he or she sees fit. And there's no sense at that point to waste energy lamenting or becoming so absorbed, is doing well, is doing badly, and so on, because there's nothing you can do about it. And especially, of course, after the parent dies here, what's the use? How will they go on? How will they do? What are you going to do about it? But it's because of attachment one becomes so concerned. You can even lament, oh, I didn't raise my child properly. Now so many bad things are going on. But one can recognize that you made a mistake, but you're not going to get a chance to go back and re-raise the child. You can't correct your mistakes. So what's even the use of lamenting about that? So this absorption in the welfare, especially the material welfare of one's family, especially, is a sign of missing the point. It's a sign of miserly intelligence. Here, this intelligence, which is meant to actually free us from death, that's our real problem, as Prabhupada says here. It's our real problem. One's actual duty is to learn how to conquer death. That's our business. He said this is one's actual duty. And there are other duties also, but if any other duty interferes with the actual duty, then it should be abandoned. So this is the actual duty, to free oneself from death. And of course, one also has this duty toward one's children or dependents, to free them also from death. In fact, one should not take on dependents in any capacity, in a political capacity, in a social capacity, in a teaching capacity, in a familial capacity, unless you know how to free your dependents from death. That's stated in Srimad Bhagavatam. You should not become a guru, a political leader, a demigod, a teacher, a mother, a father, an elder, whatever, unless you know how to free your dependents from death. And you can't know how to do that for them unless you know how to do it for yourself. So here Paranjana, now, at the time of death, he's done. Whatever you can do has been done. How will they get along? This is useless worry. It's a miserly waste of consciousness, when now he should at best be thinking, this is my time now to graduate from this human form of life. No. So this is a tragic, very, very tragic occurrence. How his family will survive after death. This is his thought. This is the disease of the conditioned soul who absorbs himself in so many of these activities. One should not be overly engaged in welfare activities for one's family members, countrymen, society, and community None of these will help a person to advance spiritually. So that's the activity. How can we help people advance on the spiritual platform? That's our overwhelming duty. One's actual duty is to learn how to conquer death. So we have to have this conviction that this is our business. And also, Krishna gives us complete information how it's to be done. We know this. That's why the words of Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita are called Amrita. Amrita means nectar. But the word, Sanskrit word for this, Amrita, means deathless, that which confers deathlessness. So we have this antidote to the poison of material existence. All around us, people are dying from material existence. They've contracted the disease of the material body. The material body is kind of a diseased condition of the soul. And we have the amrita, the potion, the antidote, which can cure this disease. So we have to take it. We have to take it ourselves, and then we have to distribute it to others, just as medical workers, when there's some disease or epidemic ravaging the country, and they have the serum that can save everybody, inoculate them against this disease or cure them. First, they take it themselves so they won't succumb. They give it to the medical workers, and the medical workers give it and go out to give it to everybody else. So that's our business. So this is somewhat of an, this is urgent business. Not to waste time in this material world, unnecessarily keeping people in a dangerous condition of life, but immediately arrange them so that they can execute their actual duty, is to learn how to conquer death. So Prabhupada says, we know how. Krishna tells us this process. Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatvataha. One who knows tatvataha, factually, in truth, in reality, the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities, that person, upon leaving his body, does not attain birth again in this material world. There's the formula for deathlessness. To understand Krishna in truth, as he is, we understand how Krishna is transcendental, how his appearance is transcendental, how his activities are transcendental. We appreciate who Krishna actually is, the way he is, tadvataha, in truth. And he spends the entire Bhagavad Gita just giving us this information. About himself, so that actually we learn Bhagavad Gita, that is Amrita, we can become free from death. This is the unique value of this book. It has this practical application. The knowledge of Bhagavad Gita is frees one from death. So one has to practice it the way it's given. So that's the idea. We understand Krishna. Krishna says those who do not accept this process, that are faithless on the path, he said, they don't attain me. Those people have to return to the world of birth and death. But those who are faithful, they come to Krishna. So this is his statement. So we have it here. How to understand Krishna in truth, in fact. And so this is our formula for deathlessness. that we simply appreciate. And Prabhupada says in the purport to that verse that he quotes here, 4:9, he says that anyone who accepts this truth on faith and who says to the Lord, "You, Krishna, you are the Supreme Brahman, the Supreme Personality of Godhead," is liberated instantly. And he said in this case, the Vedic Tattvamasi is actually applied. Tattvamasi is a famous phrase from the sixth chapter of the Chandogya Upanishad, where the disciple is explaining Brahman, impersonal Brahman, where the master is explaining impersonal Brahman to his disciple, Shvetaketu. And so he says, appears over and over again, a kind of refrain. He explains Brahman and he says, "That art thou, Tattvamasi, that art thou." So for the Mayavadis, this is their liberating utterance, their Mahavakya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu criticized Shankaracharya for making this phrase, Tattvamasi, the Mahavakya, taking one thing, it's in the sixth chapter of the Chandogya Upanishad, but it becomes for them the whole of everything. But for the devotee, for us to say, "That art thou," is to say, "You, Krishna," not that I am Brahman. That's not our process. That's dubious process, "I am Brahman." Our process is not to say, "I am Brahman," but "You, Krishna, are the Supreme Brahman." It is like Arjuna says to Krishna, after Krishna explains to him the essential verses of the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna says about Krishna, "Param Brahma, Param Dama, Pavitram Param Bhava." He recognizes who Krishna is. And he says, "You are Param Brahma, not just Brahman, but the Supreme Brahman." So anyone who says that, just as Arjuna says it, in the Bhagavad Gita, is liberated instantly. And if we can just do this with conviction and determination, then we are free from birth and death in this material world. That's what Srila Prabhupada is saying here. Well, it takes you, but to say this with conviction, what are the impediments to our conviction? The impediment to our conviction is our engaging in sense gratification. Because if we engage in sense gratification, that is an implicit way of not acknowledging Krishna's position. So what we have to do is more and more surrender to Krishna. It's this gradual process, slow process, step by step. And as we surrender more and more to Krishna, giving up the activities of sense gratification and engaging in the activities of devotional service, we become more and more convinced about who Krishna is. Otherwise, we're reluctant to acknowledge his position, because we feel we are competitors with Krishna. We are competitors. We don't like to acknowledge our place in the absolute truth. That our essence, this is our essence, this is our swarup, this is our dharma, or our swarup. The words practically mean the same thing. Our proper form is Nitya Krishna Das, eternally Krishna Das. So we have to recognize this nature of ours. We have other aspirations. We have the aspiration to become the enjoyer and the controller, which is to take Krishna's position. But there is a great divide, so to speak, or not a great divide, but there are varieties within the absolute truth. The absolute truth is one, but within that absolute truth there are varieties. So within the absolute truth, by these varieties, there are different tattvas, principles. So the two of the main principles are Vishnu Tattva and Jiva Tattva. That's the word tattva is related to tattvataha, you know, in truth. So there are tattvas, just like we have the Pancha Tattva. That Pancha Tattva shows us the varieties of the Absolute Truth. The Pancha Tattva is the Absolute Truth, but we see there are varieties. There's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna. There's Sri Nityananda. Nityananda is the first expansion, Baladev, of Krishna. And then there is Advaitacharya, another expansion for creating the material world, Bhakta Avatara. Krishna comes as Bhakta Rupa in the form of a devotee. But then there, Nityananda, as the Swarup of Krishna, as the first expansion of Krishna, as the avatar of Krishna, Mahavishnu, Purusha avatar. But all that, so that side of the Pancha Tattva, the right hand side of the Pancha Tattva, that's all Vishnu Tattva. Krishna, Balaram, Mahavishnu. Then the other side is Shakti Tattva. Another side of the Absolute Truth, Gadadhar, who is incarnation of Radha, and Srivas, who is Narada Muni, Jiva Tattva. So Jiva is there in the Absolute Truth. The Pancha Tattva is the whole Absolute Truth. So one of those categories within the Absolute Truth is Jiva. So we are part of the Absolute Truth. Absolute Truth includes everything. But as the Absolute Truth is eternal, our position is eternal. Nitya Krishna Das, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, always, eternally Krishna Das. That's our essence. You can't change it. But we've messed up everything by our refusal to accept our position as servant in the Absolute Truth. Therefore, we're delivered over to illusion. Illusion means that you don't see the reality. And that is the reality, that I am the servant. And on our spiritual, we cannot attain our spiritual existence unless we also accept fully that I am the servant, because that's our spiritual nature. We get a material body and enter into illusion because by identifying ourselves with the material body, then we can also have the illusion, I am the enjoyer, I am the controller. So now everything is all messed up. We're out of phase. We're not lined up with properly. There's a kink in the nature of things. We're not centered on Krishna. And so the whole of reality is actually lost to us. This is what illusion means. Illusion means you don't know what's going on. So when we are in illusion of material existence, we don't know what's happening. And so we are subjected to death. And we think that's what's happening. Because that has to happen. Because in any case, Nitya Krishna Das, it is not the things. There are certain things that are essential, that are of the essence. So that's of the essence, that we are servants. So Krishna doesn't change that either. We have to remain the servant. We want to be not the servant, so you can't change that. But all you can do is give the illusion. So here's the illusion. Here I give you this artificial material body. You can identify with it, and you can enter into this illusion. I am the enjoyer, the controller. But the reminder that it is an illusion is contained, is given at the time of death. That's why he says here in this purport how does he say? Since death must take away the living entity without hesitation, it is the ultimate God realization of the atheists. How is it the God realization of the atheists? Because that's when they have to bow down and submit to the higher power. They may say, no, I don't care for God, I am the enjoyer, I am the controller, I can get what I want, and they're maintaining this illusion in the face of reality. You can't fight it ultimately. But they maintain this illusion up until the bitter end. They don't admit what's happening. And then finally death comes and then they submit. So that's their process of surrender to Krishna. We don't have this choice not to surrender. So we should become convinced of that fact. One way or another, we're going to have to surrender to Krishna. So let's do it the nice way. You know, instead of just make our surrender process keeling over on some subway platform and a crowd gathers and stares. It's not very pleasant. Having your heart attacks or whatever. But that's it. That's what they recognize. So when we recognize Krishna directly as he is, then automatically we become free from this illusion of material existence. And the more we become free with the illusion of material existence, the more we recognize Krishna. So it's like fog being dispelled. The becoming of Krishna consciousness is you're in a thick fog, you can't see anything. And then slowly, slowly, as the fog lifts, you begin to see shapes and things in the distance, and then things become clearer and clearer, and finally everything is clear and you can see the sun. So similarly, Maya clears away like that. And that's actually the Krishna consciousness described. It is like the sun that clears away the fog. And what that fog is our sinful activities, which says that clears away the activities of devotional service, clears away the sinful desires of the living entity so completely that there's no chance of their coming back again. Other processes may make atonement for various sins. That you commit sin and then you some prayaschita, some atonement. I have committed this sin. And there are little books that people consult. For this sin you do this, that wipes it out. For this sin, this is the prescribed atonement. For this sin, this is the prescribed atonement. And people look down the list and they say, okay, so I must go to this place of pilgrimage and I must do this and I must do that. And they atone. But Shukadeva Goswami said that it's just like the elephant who takes a bath in the river and he gets all clean and then they come out and they roll around in the dust again. So these various atonements, they can't stop the process of suffering in this material world because the desire to commit sins is still there. And that desire to commit sins is owing to our lack of reconciliation with reality. Our unwillingness to accept this Nitya Krishna Das. So we have to get rid of this grudge against Krishna. How do we get rid of this grudge against Krishna? By hearing about Krishna. Because there's no reason to resent Krishna's position. But somehow or other that envy is there. But if we understand, you see, this difference between the jiva tattva, who we are, a little bitty tiny fragmental spark, and Krishna. So therefore the Bhagavad Gita is there and the Srimad Bhagavatam is there. If we can just hear and get some understanding of how wonderful Krishna is, how complete he is, how full of infinite transcendental qualities he is, how powerful he is, we have no chance of ever coming to that position. And why should we want to? Rather, we have to accept, yes, you, Krishna, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, I give up on this attempt. I accept you as the Supreme Personality of God. There's no one like you. Krishna is not like some other jiva who's lording it over, because of course this is the principle in the material world. Jai Jagannath, Jai Baladev, Jai Subhadra. That principle of envy is working. That immediately we see this division, that here, up on that hill, is the castle. And in that castle lives the Lord. And down here in the valley, all us peasants are toiling away as serfs, toiling away, working very hard. And he comes along and he takes 50% of all our labor and lives up there like a big man. I hate him. And someday there will be a revolution. Huh? That's a cut off his head. This is the condition that we don't like to see. We see any other jiva superior to us. That's because envy is the basis of material existence. We're envious of Krishna, so we're envious of everyone. I want to be king. He's king. Let me kill him and take his place. But Krishna is in a different... See, because what we've said, we see this guy is playing God. He has no business playing God. And I don't want to be his servant. But Krishna is not playing God. He is God. That's the difference. He is God in reality. That's what people say when they hear about Krishna. Isn't he on an ego trip? There's nothing but Krishna. He's not on an ego trip. He's not claiming to be something he isn't. He's not putting on pretensions. What do you think when he's saying, Aham sarvasya prabhava mat sarvam pravartate? He's lying? No, he's God. He is God. So let's just recognize this. Krishna, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So for so long, I've been trying so hard to take your place and resenting your position, I quit. Let me become your servant. And just with an open mind, read Bhagavad Gita and find out who Krishna is and accept it. Tatvataha, accept it. Janma karma tame divyam evam yovedita. And as soon as we accept that Krishna is transcendental, the supreme Brahman, then we also become Brahman. We enter into that eternal existence. So this is our business. That is how we free ourselves from death. Now, anything that is a distraction from that project is a waste of time and a waste of human intelligence. Naturally, there has to be some welfare work, material welfare work for our family, for society. That has to go on. But here, he says that at the expense, when these things are done at the expense of spiritual progress, then there. And actually, the system of Krishna consciousness is so perfect that if we put all our effort into spiritual progress, automatically all these other things will be included without necessity of making a separate effort, distracting effort. So we should learn from this. And to actually solve the problem of life. That's what we're meant to do. So we can do it. We know how. We've been given the instructions how to do it. We apply it in our lives. We see that it works. That it actually works. As more we take to the process, the more we see it works, the more our conviction increases by our own experience. And then we give it to others also. Not to also be misers, that now we're sitting on the treasure house of love of God. If we don't go out and give it to others, then we're guilty of violence against other living beings. That's also a kind of violence. You have the cure and you don't give it. There's a famous poem by author Hugh Clough, the British poet, the new Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not kill, but need not strive officiously to keep alive. In other words, if you just let somebody die, it's okay. So we recognize that violence is also neglect, not preaching Krishna consciousness. That's also violence. So we should not commit violence, neither to ourselves nor to anyone else, and not be miserly with what we've been given. Take to this process of Krishna consciousness and help others take to it. Then everything will be perfect. Any comments or questions? No? Yes, Prabhu? No, not necessarily. Because if the material act, you know, that for example, in order to be Krishna consciousness, you have to keep healthy. And so if I have to spend some time keeping healthy, that process is innate of Krishna consciousness. It's not really a distraction. Or maintaining the family members, because then a grahastha is in charge. It's just that somehow we're under the illusion that if I'm doing this for my family rather than for some other institution, that somehow if I do it for my family, that's not helping in Krishna consciousness. Well, it depends on how much I'm engaging my family in the process of Krishna consciousness. But if it's serving that, then that's all right. Just like making money, that may seem like when I'm working at some job, that may seem to be a distraction from Krishna consciousness. But if it's not, if the money is being used for Krishna consciousness, the family is being maintained for Krishna consciousness, well, these go on. So the process is there, varna and ashrama, how different people have arrangement for engaging in Krishna consciousness according to their different stages of life and social capacity. Yeah? That's a fact. The mother taking care of her child, if she's a pure devotee, you know, that's what would the effect be on the child? But if the mother's taking the care of the child, he says, "Oh, you have such pretty hair. You're so handsome." You're so just increase the illusion more and more. That's not so good. All right, glorious to Srila Prabhupada.